Blog Talk Radio.
Laurie Smith. This is One Child Abuse Survivor to Another Restoration, and I'm glad to be here tonight. It is Monday night, December 3rd, 2018, 10 o'clock in the evening here, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Glad to be here, and hope you're all okay. I do have the chat room open if anybody wants to sit in there. And the link is there to the information that we're looking at from Havoca. HAVOCA, Havoca, Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse. That's not a Moore Center program. Havoca.org. It's actually a really good website. We've gone through a lot of their material. We're looking at personal boundaries, and we'll just pick up from where we left off. So that's kind of what we're doing right now. There's a few more. Another one more show of this one, and then I think we're going to move on. But this website's really worth taking a look at, havoca.org. And there's lots and lots of info on there for survivors of abuse, right? So be sure and check it out. So, yeah, this show, you know, it's mainly dealing with the topics of, you know, for adult survivors of child abuse, right? So, you know, if you're a survivor and you're listening to this and you're not sure if you're safe enough to be listening and, you know, you don't want to be triggered and end up going backward in your healing journey, that's just really not okay. So you need to know whether you're safe enough to listen to this or not and be 100% sure. If you're not sure, then you need to turn the show off and just, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be hurting my feelings. And just get that information. You can find that information in lots of different places, but the ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, a Moore Center program, they have a safety first chapter in their Survivor to Thriver workbook. And it's like one of the first chapters in the book so that you can learn how to be safe. And so, you know, I'd get that information and read it. And that way you can know how to know whether you're safe enough to be listening or not, right? So if you're not sure, just turn the show off. You won't be hurting my feelings. Anybody else who's listening, you know, you have to listen at your own discretion. I'm talking about abuse, very, very sensitive topic. I'm just mainly talking about my own situation. But and with the information that I'm reading along here, just to, you know, as one survivor to another. But you know, if these topics of abuse and violence and anything surrounding abuse of any type make you uncomfortable, then you ultimately have to make that decision for yourself, right? Whether you feel comfortable or not to listen. So you make that choice. It's up to you. So, yeah, we'll get right into this. This is looking at personal boundaries. And I'm not going to repeat the stuff from the last show just because, you know, we've already covered that. But we'll just move right into the next portion of this article. It's just an article. I don't even know who wrote it, but it's somebody who writes for Havoca. And they said here, like, boundaries, you know, these personal boundaries, it's kind of like what I'm going to allow, like, to what I'm going to make sure that people around me, you know that I have these boundaries set up so that I get my needs met, you know. You know, how I'm going to allow people to treat me, what I'm going to expect from people, you know, what I expect from myself, you know, towards other people. It's kind of like, it's basically to protect care of ourselves. And boundaries are so, actually are crossed in the situation of abuse, any type of abuse. And so a lot of times people growing up, you know, in abusive households of any type of abuse may not understand even what healthy boundaries are or what they look like. I know for my, in my case, that was the case. So, because I just, you know, I had no healthy relationship stuff at all growing up. So I had to learn this stuff through life the hard way. And here I am today, you know, sitting here at the age of almost 53. And I've learned a lot just over the years, but mainly looking at John Bradshaw's work, healing the wounds that bind us, and that other one, the what is that one? It's a toxic shame. Let me just see here. John Bradshaw, he's got some great books. I've only read two, but Healing the Shame That Binds You, and then there's Homecoming, let's see here, Reclaiming and Healing Your Inner Child. I actually picked up a lot of information from those books regarding codependency and boundaries and stuff. And also Robert Burney, he's written a lot of material, but he wrote a book called Codependence, The Dance of Wounded Souls, and a cosmic perspective of codependence and the human condition. And he's really written a lot of material, and I've read most of it, and he's quite good. So I've looked at a lot of boundary work. I've done a lot of boundary work, so I don't have too many problems in that area anymore. I've come a long way, but it takes time. You know, a lot of stuff we don't maybe recognize, and until something happens, and then we're like, oh. You know, this is the same old thing, right? I just keep ending up in the same situation, whether it's a boss, whether it's a friend, you know, where we don't have these boundaries in place and then they get stepped on and we're not protecting ourselves. We may end up being taken advantage of, or we're not getting our needs met in any relationship, whether it's, you know, a personal relationship or a work relationship or whatever it is. So it's very difficult. And so we'll pick up where we left off. This person writes, in my codependency, they're talking about, I learned to be enmeshed with other people, to not have healthy boundaries that told me who I was and that I was a separate person from them. I had to become hypervigilant in childhood. I learned to focus on trying to interpret what my parents and other authority figures were feeling in order to try to protect myself. As an adult, I unconsciously tried to manipulate people by trying to be what they wanted me to be if I wanted them to like me, or trying to be either intimidating or invisible if that seemed the safest course. And they go on to say, I had no real concept of being responsible for my own feelings because I had learned that other people were responsible for my feelings, and vice versa. So this person says, I had to learn to start defining myself emotionally as separate from other people in order to start learning who I was. And I think this is just so interesting because I grew up in this type of a mess, you know, meshing, having to, feeling that I needed to, or actually being kind of, it seemed the only real way to be in our home was to take on the feelings of whoever was in the room, basically. It saved a lot of problems. And my parents were both mentally ill, psychologically messed up, as well as highly toxic and abusive. And they were in a very unhappy, abusive marriage. And it was just absolutely a nightmare. And so I think this happens a lot, especially in dysfunctional homes, dysfunctional families. As adults, if you didn't grow up that way, you recognize that behavior as it sort of turns you off. It's like a disturbing behavior when somebody tries to do that around you. If you yourself have healthy boundaries, you get two people in the room with boundary issues that have no healthy boundaries. They won't pretty much recognize that there's anything different because they're both coming from a situation where everything's messed up. So it's really trippy. I know for myself, I've had a lot of difficulties in the past with this. But like I said, as an adult, I've come a long way, and I know what I want. I know how I want to be treated. I know what I expect from other people. I also know what I expect from myself to treat how I'm going to treat other people the same way I want them to treat me, with respect and dignity, just the common respect and dignity that any human being deserves. And, you know, that's just all a person can really ask for, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, but as growing up abused, you know, I mean, my parents were both depressed quite often. Manic depression, which back in the old days, that's what they used to call it, manic depressive states. But basically, I guess nowadays they changed it to bipolar. But my mom was diagnosed bipolar, and so was one of my older brothers. But they were, I mean, when my mom was my main abuser, so I was continually watching her moods, because that's how I could tell if I was going to be beaten up or not. Pretty much, I could tell how she was behaving, you know, if she was throwing things around the kitchen or slamming her fists on the table or, you know, screaming and ranting and raving in anger, then I kind of knew, you know, some physical abuse was probably going to happen from that, usually directed towards me. If she was depressed and crying in her bedroom and just, well, she had this little tiny room off the kitchen, but anyway, if she was like crying, you know, for days or whatever, just not wanting to get out of bed, just wishing that her life was over, then I could kind of expect that she would ignore me, or it would be more of a psychological abuse type thing. Look what you children have caused. You know, I just want my life to be over. It's your father. He's driven me crazy. I just want to die, or whatever she would say. So then you start to believe that, you know, you need to be like them, so that you can either avoid the abuse or gain some brownie points. That was my thing. It was kind of like I was hoping to gain some brownie points, you know, for the next time, you know, just to avoid some abuse, especially from my mother. But my dad was the same way. They were both really, really messed up. So it was really difficult then to navigate in life. And I found, really, I was not an overachiever. I never really have been an overachiever. I'm a hard worker, and I think it's because I'm always trying to prove to myself that I can do it, because I don't really care so much what other people think about me, to be honest. I guess I do in a way, because I want to be able to be like an adult that can take care of myself, and I want people to see that. So whether it's a boss or, you know, a coworker, supervisor, a friend, anybody that I kind of know, or you know, am sort of on more than just, I guess, acquaintance terms with, you know, I like for them to see that I can take care of myself and I can take care of things, but I'm definitely not an overachiever, and I'm not a people pleaser, so I didn't pick that up from that, but I know that can happen in situations where children, you know, take on these roles of, you know, doing anything they can to please, the people in their life, because that's what they had to do as children, just to avoid abuse or to try to possibly avoid abuse of some type, right? So then they become, you know, they work overtime, you know, to try to be these perfect people. And for me, I'm just like, you know, either like me or you don't. I don't care. One way or the other, you know, because not everybody likes everybody. And when I grew up, I thought, you know, not everybody's going to like me. I don't like everybody, so why would I assume that everybody's going to like me? Everybody's got different personality types, you know, and not everybody's so enthralled with everybody else. You know, you find your certain type of person that you like, and that's all there is to it. So I'm not one of those people that's out trying to be a people pleaser, but I know that can definitely happen. And that's kind of that in, you know, becoming whatever, you know, like she's like, I think it's a woman writing here, and she says, you know, she unconsciously tried to manipulate people by trying to be what they wanted her to be or wanted me to be if I wanted them to like me, or trying to be either intimidating or invisible if that seemed the safest course. Now, I did do that. I have done a lot of that as far as being whatever seems safest in the moment. I have used that quite a bit, especially in my teens, preteens, teens, when I was getting older and on the streets quite a bit. You know, I used to carry myself kind of standoffish, a little bit more like I might attack somebody if they tried anything first. They'd probably lose. They'd lose the fight for sure. Because I was like, you know, I think you're messing with the wrong person. You know, I'm kind of cute and everything, but I'm not very nice. I'm like one of these cats or these dogs that you see that's really cute and everything. You want to pet them and then they rip your hand off. That's my nature. You know, it's like you're messing with the wrong person when you're messing with me, but I'm real friendly until you mess with me. I don't know, I've always been sort of trying, always working to protect myself, and that's just because I grew up abused. So then as an adult, I had to realize that not everybody's out to get me, not everybody's out to hurt me, but I do keep my guard up, because you have to. But I want people to like me and to trust me and to give me a chance, see? And so I remember that, you know, and I keep that with me. When I meet other people and I come into a situation where, you know, you're starting to work with new people or you meet someone else, and you know, I want them to trust me, but I also need to be trustworthy, right? And I want them to treat me with dignity so that I, in respect, I need to do the same and trust that they're going to do that, you know, and give them the chance, because I want a chance to prove that I can do it, you know, that I could be that type of person, right? And so I've learned over the years how to do this stuff, but it didn't happen overnight, and it really took work to do it. And it's a lot of work. So it's pretty harsh what this stuff causes people to do. So this person says, I had no real concept of being responsible for my own feelings because I had learned that other people were responsible for my feelings and vice versa. I had to learn to start defining myself emotionally as separate from other people in order to start learning who I was. Yeah, it's kind of trippy that, you know, I spent so many years with my abusive parents. And even after the abuse stopped, you know, I was still trying to help them out, and it's mainly my mother. And, you know, never even thought that I was being set up for a huge fall from her. And then at the age of 30, or 29 actually, she just drops this bomb on me, you know, and I knew it all along, but I got the truth from her at a very late age in life, and I didn't want to hear what she said, but I knew it was the truth anyway. And so I left them completely, moved to Canada, got away from them, and that's when my life actually began. So I didn't really start having my own thoughts, my own feelings of what I needed to do as an adult, until I got away from them. And so all that I understand very clearly. This stuff is really damaging. Codependency, boundary issues, you know, my mom would say stuff like, you know, my whole youth growing up, especially in my, really all the way through, but especially my teens, she became so vicious because I was older. She felt like she couldn't control me. So she'd use any means or whatever to try to manipulate me. Fear mainly, and, you know, just trauma and traumatizing me and busting my head open and breaking my bones. But anyway, you know, she would say stuff like, at first, you know, when I was growing up, I was just useless. I was just worthless. I was this, I was that, all these horrible, horrible names. And then when I became old enough to move out of the house, it turned around real quick, because she knew that I was her last line of defense from my dad, because she knew that I would look out for her, keep an eye on her to make sure that my dad wasn't abusing her. And I was the last child in the home. So her tune changed, and all of a sudden, I didn't become the dear, sweet, you know, oh, I love you and how can I make it up to you. She never apologized for any of the abuse, ever. But what she did do was start manipulating me. Oh, well, you could stay here and, you know, and you could just, you know, chip in towards the rent, and you could just, you know, this, and you could do that. And I just picked that up like a rabbit, you know, on a carrot trail, like a bunny trail with a bunch of carrots with carrot tops there. She just led me along, feeding me these carrots and carrot tops, you know, like a bunny. And I was like, and I couldn't believe at the age of 29 that I had been so manipulated and so used and had given up so many years of my life for nothing. It was unbelievable, unreal hurt. And I, at that point, could see her for who she really was. And I thought, wow, she's a master manipulator. Whoa. And nobody else will see that. Maybe some people would in my family, but most of them won't, because they're just as screwed up, right? So it's just unbelievable, absolutely horrible, what people do to each other, and especially to their children. It took me a long time to then figure out who I will, you know, what I was doing, you know. No, I wasn't this useless, worthless child that should have been born dead, and all this stuff that she had told me, you know, when I was growing up. and that, you know, I did matter, I did count. And that voice started to like settle in, you know, and I started to realize, no, I'm a person separate from all of that. I don't have to carry that baggage around. As I was doing these blog talk shows here back in 2009, that's the realization that came to me as I was doing these, working through the John Bradshaw's books especially, that all of this abuse and garbage that had happened to me by my, you know, dished out from my parents and my sibling, it was like all this stuff, these beads on a necklace around my neck, and all this abuse and horror and pain and garbage and emotional pain and trauma and psychotic stuff, you know, evil stuff that was hanging around my neck. I just saw it as this necklace that was hanging around my neck. I didn't put it there. It was all put there by them. And they were making me wear it, you know. And I was like, whoa, I just imagined that I could rip this necklace off. And I ripped it off and I threw it away. I'm like, that does not belong to me, man. It's not that I'm in denial and I'm not, obviously I talk about the abuse all the time. The issue is I don't have to wear that necklace because I'm none of those things that they said to me. And I'm none of those things that they did to me. You know, for years I fought with this image of being so damaged and so messed up because that's how I still, part of me feels that way. I think because I don't feel right. I don't feel normal. I feel somehow, used, like a used beat up car on a car lot. When I go, like, that's just for an analogy, you know, like when I'm around other people in a room of people, I see them as regular people and I see myself as damaged goods. So I belong in the damaged goods section. So I don't really allow myself to fit in with people. And when I do, I end up having a great time. But I have to get over that hurdle to say, no, you belong here just as well as they do. You have every right to be here just as much as everybody else does. And that stuff that they did to you is not, it doesn't define me. You know, it's not who I am. It's a big deal, and this stuff is, it's very, very hard to get a hold of it sometimes to, because it's so rooted down in the psyche, right? So it's hard to see it, and it's hard to get a hold of it. But once you see it, you can do something about it. Now, we only have a few minutes. Like, these shows go so quick. But I think what we'll do is we'll pick up the next part next week because it's a little bit lengthy to talk about. I think we've only got, what do we have here? I know this half hour goes really quick. Got about 7 minutes left. Yeah, the other section is pretty interesting too. If you want to go check that out, it's Havoca, Havoca, Havoca.org, /survivors/personal-boundaries. And or you can just go to Havoca.org and go to their survivor tab. And then all the topics will come up on the left-hand, I believe it's the left-hand side of the page. And you just scroll through and pick what you want to look at. How about we'll look at some self-nurturing ideas? Because I was doing these things just like a positive reinforcement. What am I doing right in my daily walk? Looking at positives and progress instead of negative thoughts. I was doing that in the morning, but we can still do that at night. You know, lately I've been working on a lot of things. You know, my husband just passed away 4 months ago, and it's been difficult. But you know, I'm doing really well. And you know, I do have support and. I know that I can reach out to people if I need to. I'm actually really quite strong. So, you know, I'm okay. But it is, I have my moments, you know, where I break down a little bit. That's okay. I need to be able to feel what I need to feel. Mostly I'm doing all right. But what I have decided to do, because the winter's coming and I wanted to get in better physical shape anyways, I'm actually working on that right now. Even though the holidays are coming, you know, I'm working on incorporating some exercise in my day, working on eating a little healthier. I think these are big positives for me because this has been something that I've been trying to do for a long, long time. And because my husband was so sick, I really didn't have the time to concentrate on me. It's kind of like, well, something had to kind of go to the wayside. And so I didn't worry too much about that stuff. And I just worked and tried to take care of him. But, and, you know, I mean, bless him, you know, he's a sweet man. And I'd rather have no time to work on me and have him back here. But he was suffering so badly. I'm actually glad that he's at peace. You know, he's not suffering anymore. And that brings me peace. So, you know, and he would want me to go on. He would want me to do well. That's what he was so worried. He was just like, what are you going to do? And because he knew he was going. And, you know, I talk about it all the time. But anyway, I told him, I'm just going to keep going, hon. I got to keep going till I go to be with you, you know, in the eternity future. For now, I just got to keep going. So I know that's what he would want. So that's what I want for you, you know, to take care and take care of yourself. Here's some self-nurturing ideas from, this is also from Havoka. This is kind of under affirmations, self-esteem affirmations. But they had this under this section. It's self-nurturing ideas. What we could do, these are belonging and love needs. We could open up to the person closest to us, a best friend or something. We could turn off the TV and talk. If you have a friend to talk to, hold someone's hand, hug someone, could contact someone we've been thinking about. We could tell someone how much we appreciate them, right? Things like that. And for esteem needs, we could give ourselves a compliment, could look at the stars. We could forget an old grudge. That I need to work on. We could try a new food or just anything. Sign up for a new class, right? Learn something new, sing in the shower, make a list of 10 things that we do well, right? Walk in the rain, waste a little time. I try to do all these little things quite a bit. Like I'm always working on some little thing, you know, to do something nice for somebody else and for me during the day, you know, because it's a good idea. Otherwise, the day just goes, and then it's over, and then what are you going to do? We need to take time to self-nurture, and to then, because we're self-nurturing, it's much easier to nurture around us for people that come into our lives that need a little nurturing. If we're doing some self-nurturing, it's a lot easier to nurture somebody else who needs help, right? Because we're not the only one suffering. I'm not the only one in this situation, and that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I'm like, look, I know I'm not the only one in this situation. I know there's people out there suffering and hurting and really messed up, you know, and it's hard. I mean, I just ran into a lady here tonight coming home from work. I had to stop at the store, and this lady was had her crutches sitting by her, and she was sitting down on the wet, cold, snow, cold, ice, cold ground in front of this store begging money, right, just looking for panhandling for change, probably for drugs or something. Her face was all beat up, and she just looked terrible. And, you know, what do? I gave her my gloves. You know, I'm like, you better get in somewhere warm. She's like, yeah. And, you know, it's cold up here. And that's, I mean, that could have been my brother. See, my brother was on, well, two of my brothers actually lived on the streets, drug addicts, getting, you know, mugged and beaten up and losing their fingers to frostbite and stuff. And really, you know, that could have been them. That could have been me. So how are we going to be good to somebody else if we're not good to ourselves? Right? We need to be good to ourselves as well as somebody else. So we need to do what we can to help ourselves first and then help other people around us if you can, right? And it's really hard, you know. There's people out there that are suffering, and if you're one of them, you need to reach out and you need to get help. And I'm telling you, don't suffer on your own. Get help anonymously if you have to. That's what I did at first. Just, you know, join an anonymous support group. You don't even have to give your real name, you know. And you can join up. Nobody knows who you are. And you can be a part of it, right? And or call a crisis line. You know, do whatever you have to do. But I'm telling you, you stick it out. Do not lose this battle. You have to win this battle. For me, winning is staying alive. And doing really well every single day. Because that is a slap in my abusers' faces. Every day I wake up and I'm smiling and I'm like, oh, this is good. You know, I have a hard time, but this is good because I'm just, you know, I'm making it. And it's not a pretend thing. It's for real. It's a slow process, but I'm making it. And that, to me, is the biggest thing, the biggest gift I could ever give to myself is to not give up. And that's what I want you to do. Don't ever give up. You stick it out. Right, and I hope to see you all back here next week. Same time, same place. Until then, take good care of yourselves. Bye-bye.